Hello, nursing station.
Calling all oncology nurses.
Are you ready to sharpen your practice, maximize your impact, and stay on the cutting edge of oncology care?
Then you found the right place. Welcome to Onc Nurse On Call. We're your hosts, Patricia Jekyll
and Stephanie DeRogier. Join us on the new podcast by Oncology Nursing News as we deliver maximum value in minimal time.
Every minute counts. Let's make it count for your patients.
So hi, Jackie. Thank you for joining us today. You've had an extensive journey in oncology nursing. Can you share with us that journey and your current role?
Sure. My journey in oncology nursing actually started because a manager was unavailable for cardiology. I wanted to go into cardiology and cardiovascular nursing, and the manager was not available. And so the human resource people told me, why don't you interview with another manager who has some time and this will be practice. I was a new grad. And so she was an oncology nurse. She was out of the University of Nebraska, and she was very much pro-ONS. And my interview ended up going for an hour and a half. And she convinced me that I should place my career journey in the hands of an oncology patient, and that I would get great value because of the holistic approach that in oncology nursing that we often do. And so I canceled my interview with the cardiovascular nurse and I moved forward working on an inpatient oncology unit. And at that time, that was when majority all chemo was being given inpatient. There was very little, if any, being given on the outpatient setting. It took me back to Los Angeles while I was orienting. My clinical educator, nurse educator at that time, she said, you know what, you would be good in education, but the only position we have is in oncology. And I said, I'll take it. That took me on the path away from the bedside nurse, bedside practice, but supporting the care that happens at the bedside. And so for years, I was a nurse educator, and then I came to UCLA through the encouragement of a multitude of nurses and became a clinical nurse specialist in oncology. And that's when my journey kind of wove through how healthcare systems were handling clinical nurse specialists at the time. They didn't quite know fully what to do with us. And they were only kind of blocking us into educator roles. And the other aspects of research and clinical leadership really was not being highlighted as much. And so I had a journey with working with bone marrow transplant, with working with inpatient and focusing on pain management. And as a result of still being locked into that educator role, my journey took a little curveball, and I went into the ambulatory setting working with breast cancer patients, primarily with the surgical team. And I did that for close to 20 plus years. And then I circled back and I was like, you know how you become comfortable a little bit over time? Sometimes that's just not so good for our brains and nurses, because we like to challenge ourselves. We like to feel like we can still use that critical thinking. We can still, you know, make a change difference. And even though you may not be in a CNS role, you're still wired as a CNS. So you look often at systems. And it was getting to a point where we had built the system for the Breast Center of Excellence where I was at the time. And the organization was taking a shift. So the support to maintain that was shifting. And I said, let me shift. And I came back into the inpatient setting. And oh boy, what a surprise it has been coming back to the inpatient setting after being away for decades. New drugs I never heard of. didn't know because I was tied to a surgical side. Different modalities that were tied. I was used to bone marrow transplant, but there was gene therapy, cellular therapy, CAR T cells, all of these things that were happening that were very new. So, coming to a teaching institution has been beneficial because it's re-exposed me to all the innovation and advances that are coming in oncology care and treatment. So that's a little bit of a long way to my journey.
No, it's a wonderful story. And I think, you and Patty are kind of in that pioneer of clinical nurse specialist. And Patty was actually the reason I went to be a clinical nurse specialist, and just the value in the expansion of the role versus an educator. Because people often say, oh, you're the educator. No, it's a broader role that I think all of us that do this work have seen the impact you can make as a clinical nurse specialist. So thank you. I think that's definitely an amazing journey of a long career. And that brings me to my next question. So in coming back to the inpatient setting, what would you say has been the most impactful? If you could think of one thing you've seen and in your role as a CNS, how you have impacted that particular change in the environment you're currently in.
But with that basic practice, fundamental cares, one of the biggest impacts that I've made is in regards to safe handling of anti-neoplastic and hazardous drugs. Shortly after I got here, in my new role here at UCLA, they started doing a new treatment therapy here. Not necessarily new because we've already done concentrated hepatic arterial infusion of anti-neoplastic agents, but one of our interventional radiologists was wanted to incorporate this treatment that that included perfusion, to isolate the areas in the liver and give high dose, a really high level of melphalan directly into the liver and then have it perfused out over a certain time. And when I was observing that procedure, I was noticing that some of the safe handling procedures that we would do on the oncology nurses, where our nurses have been trained under ONS, chemotherapy, biotherapy standards, and also had interactions with our hazardous safe handling manager that did some education as well. They weren't applying those in an area where they don't give chemo that frequency. So one of the areas that believe that I'm making my headway is in this area of safe handling, in particular in the areas where it's not common and frequent, and we don't often have chemo-certified nurses in those areas administering.
So that actually brings me to my next question. So you've had impact there. Can you talk about what that performance improvement initiative has been like for you? You saw a need, and now you took that need and you applied an initiative. How did you measure it, and what has the outcome been?
I had to familiarize myself with the current standards that were involved to look at, because a lot of the areas I was never familiar, wasn't familiar with some of the different PPE that's required when someone is handling anti-neoplastics in a non-oncology setting or where it's sterile. Technique needs to be maintained through the process. And so my approach was one to see what basic training did the nurses that were involved and the staff that were non-nursing that was involved, what basic training did they already have? And many had already had the standard USP 800 training that was mandatory. And also, but that was the extent, that was it. They had an in-service on the new on the new procedure, and it was interesting because the agent is perfused through so quickly that they said only 10% of that medication would remain in the system. They were saying, you know, it's not going to be a significant amount where there may be precautions. And so my CNS hat came on and said, okay, if this is a high dose, that's is almost 10 times higher than what we would give via IV. So that 10% is a significant amount that's going to be perfused and pretty much still be in systemic circulation. I then collaborated with other CNSs that had worked with antineoplastics in procedural areas like the CNS that's involved with the OR. Interventional radiology did not have a CNS, and their educator had retired at that time. So there was really no support in that arena. I also collaborated with the nurse professional development specialist, which is also is responsible for the initial education to see what is being offered or what could be accessible to the staff there. I then talked to leadership and said, well, you know, these are some of the standards that we follow and that are recommended. This is advisable for, you know, your area as well. And so there was a little bit of having to put to present that evidence and that's those standards there, but we move forward with the general in-servicing. The thing that prompted to dig deeper was that they did not know how to manage closed system transfer devices. That was a new PPE that is not commonly used in the interventional radiology setting, and so. With the guidelines supporting the use of closed system transfer devices for safe handling, how that and that all staff that would manage or engage with either administering or handling body excreta or anything after, they need to be in service and receive education, whether they were nursing, interventional radiology technologists, perfusionists, anesthesiologists, the doctors, anyone that could possibly come in contact, there needed to be some type of in-servicing and some training. And so we then discovered that there needed to be actual simulations with how it would look like in the interventional radiology setting, donning and doffing chemotherapy-approved PPE. In order to safely administer, and then how to connect those closed system transfer devices and maintain the sterile field while they were doing it. And then also, how would the staff actually get the, how would it be delivered to them? Because of the, in this particular period, there is a short window from the time that that antineoplastic agent is reconstituted or compounded in pharmacy, they only have an hour from the point that that happens to the point that the end of the infusion needs to take place. Otherwise, the drug is losing its effectiveness. And so there's a very short time period that required a lot of coordination. So I had to involve pharmacy, I had to involve our EVS. And those that would train that would help with spill management, having the proper containers. And what we would do as far as making sure that it was delivered appropriately, pharmacy was not going to deliver it to us. That we were going to have one of our team go and get it. So it was more that coordination and collaboration that was taking place. And so my approach was definitely interdisciplinary And it was definitely collaborative, and it was very much grassroots, just in time type training because the procedures were happening, and we didn't have necessarily the system-wide structure fully set in place for this procedure.
Wonderful. That sounds like a wonderful project. And where are they now?
So it's interesting because it's really been evolving. One of the things that, and it I really always it takes sometimes it takes a challenge or a mishap to get the attention of a healthcare organization's leaderships that can sometimes make a shift or a change. And that happened when we were in the midst, I don't know if you remember when we were having that tubing shortage because of the hurricane. I think it was in Louisiana, New Orleans, that area. And as a result, our pharmacy began to use secondary tubing, which has a backflow valve in it. And this particular procedure, that's the setup of how it's to be done when given, on the floor in the infusion center. But one of the components that's used in this procedure is a power injector that is used in interventional radiology to help filter the melphalan into the hepatic artery. And so it's used as a part of the administration process. Well, when you put the power of that power injector to tubing that has a back filter, it's almost like the perfect storm. And as a result, that perfect storm happened, and we realized as an organization there were gaps because of that mishap that we needed to tighten up because it made it vulnerable for both our staff, for both our patient, getting the treatment in the time frame, and also for our providers that were actually administering. And so, as a result, the ear was more attentive to the recommendations after that mishap happened. And so, we were able to bring in wholeheartedly what was needed. Staff's compliance with it improved. Actually, the time frame for the actual procedure shortened. And when I initially came, it was about 3 hours for the procedure. But as a result of incorporating collaborations with all of the interventional radiology staff, donning their PPE, being prepared, doing standards of standard operating procedures with scripting and simulations for the staff, we were able to cut that time from 3 hours to sometimes 2, 2.5 hours. And that was a big time savings, especially if we wanted to do more than one procedure in a day.
That's amazing. Thank you, Jackie.
Are you ready for me now?
I am.
Hello. So actually, I thought of another question, which I think you answered as you were talking about it, but I'll ask it anyway. Were the nurses resistant to wearing the PPE? And I hope in the world of oncology, we've gotten over that hurdle that Stephanie and I used to have to jump over repeatedly to make the nurses understand how important it was to protect themselves. How were the interventional radiology nurses? I know they took the online module for USB 800, but were they receptive to wearing the PPE? Or did they say, oh, I don't need it, nothing's going to happen?
No, actually, it's interesting because the nurses were like, oh, when it came to it, because they saw the word chemo, it was or anti-high alert medication and hazardous drug, anti-neoplastics required chemo certified nurse. That triggered a lot initially. That was on the MAR. And so none of the nurses there were at the time are ONS chemo certified.
Right,
And
of course.
so That alone, nurses are very, you had a variety of age ranges and nurses that are in their reproductive years, and they're like, what's going on here? What do I need? So they were very open. Believe it or not, the resistance of, oh, I didn't need it, was from the other staff, the other team members of the team, the perfusionists, those that were a little bit distant from the actual location of where the procedure was taking place in proximity in the room. And so that's where the resistance came. However, when we had either a minor spill, like less like a drop or two, that high alert sparked again with the nurses, and they advocated that, you know what, we need more. So I was very impressed with the awareness of something being labeled as hazardous that they were not familiar with, and they knew that it must have required additional training or additional PPE, something they needed in order to feel comfortable doing it. And so that pushback wasn't there. And then after our significant event, it was a no problem. I wish I could show you a picture. It was no problem for anybody in that room to put on PPE after what they experienced. Because we're a teaching hospital, we have had in an interventional radiology suite anywhere from 10 to 12 people can be in that procedural room, because you have perfusionists that may be training other perfusionists. You have interventional radiologists training other interventional radiologists. So it's a very crowded space.
Right.
And before, we only might have seen three: the nurse that would hand the interventional radiologist the bag, the interventional radiologist, they would be guard, and the tech that was managing the power injector. That was it. After the training and reintroducing and maintaining the standards for everybody in the room, it looks like a chemo PPE, not a chemo, but a hazardous drug PPE heaven. Everybody was had goggles, shields, coverings, gowns, double gloves. They knew how to appropriately do it. And so it has shifted. That was the biggest shift that occurred, is their need to protect themselves and willing to do it and not giving the pushback.
Well, that's great work. That's amazing. I'm visualizing the PPE heaven that was going on, because I know it can be a trial. So finally, what do you think the most important lesson you learned from this whole process?
This whole process, one of the things that I've learned is that healthcare organizations, we need to move from fragmented or just limited collaborations where nursing is not always on at the table when some of these decisions are being made. An oncology nurse needs to be at the table at all times when there are decisions about how to administer, handle, or new drugs, new therapies that are coming in involving antineoplastics or hazardous drugs that are either a part of the NIOSH table one or table two. I don't care what route it's being given or what setting it's being given in. They need to be at the table so that the organization can view it across settings and not just set up policy, procedure, and requirements based off of one scope or one setting. I really, one of the things that I've learned, and it's kind of the dream, would be that there's a collaboration between all the settings that are giving these agents, and that we are able to have consistency that lines up with the standards and that lines up in a way that promotes safety for the patients and for the nursing staff and any other staff that is giving it, especially physicians when they are administering these types of hazardous drugs that are very have very, strong side effects and that can impact, and they may not have had equal time to be trained on how to manage.
Well, great work. We really appreciate you sharing with us, and we really appreciate you taking time. I know how crazy the day can be, so thank you so much.
Thank
Thank
you,
you, Patty.
Jackie.
Thank you, Stephanie.
That's it for this episode of Onc Nurse On Call. You can find the detailed show notes at www.onknursingnews.com.
If you found value in this episode, hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave us a review. It helps other oncology nurses find our show.
Join us again in 2 weeks for another power-packed evidence-based episode.
Until then, keep leading with excellence.